From Altoona to Warminster, Somerset to Selins Grove, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the 2023 general election is just days away, with statewide court races along with county, local, and school board races on the ballot. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with an overview. Allegheny County will have a new county executive, and many counties around the state will have new county commissioners come January. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report on the challenges they will face. And Congress budgets by crisis, with the threat of a shutdown finally bringing action. But there is a better way. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Commonwealth Court has ruled that the regional greenhouse gas initiative, known as REGI, is in fact a carbon tax. The administration of former Governor Tom Wolf entered into the multi-state compact without gaining legislative approval, prompting lawmakers to challenge the agreement as being unconstitutional, since only the legislature can enact a tax. The Commonwealth Court agreed that REGI is in fact a tax, thus ending, at least for now, Pennsylvania's participation in the scheme. REGI supposedly would help reduce greenhouse gases by implementing a carbon tax on electricity generated by fossil fuels. The project has had minimal to no impact on CO2 emissions and threatened to dramatically escalate consumer electric bills. It remains to be seen if the Shapiro administration will appeal the ruling. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives this past week approved a $643 million funding package for the four state-related universities, the University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, Temple, and Lincoln. But the legislation included a stipulation that the universities would be required to freeze tuition for the 2024-2025 academic year. The funding had been held up due to concerns over a lack of transparency from the universities into how the funding is spent and concerns over fetal tissue research and the violation of free speech rights of campus conservatives. Republicans have gained considerable ground on Democrats in terms of voter registration. Recent numbers show Democrats continue to have more registered voters than Republicans, but that margin closed by 103,398 voters over the past year, cutting the Democrats' registration advantage to 445,890 voters. Democrats actually lost voters over the past year, while Republicans and independents posted gains. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Voters in Penns Woods will find a lengthy ballot when they go to the polls on Tuesday. A wide array of county, local, and school board races join the four statewide judicial races on the general election ballot. Here to sort through all of that is veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. So, Chris, this year it's often called an off year, which I think is something that we should never use that term, that every year is important.
Absolutely, Loman. There are no off year elections.
And, of course, this year we do have a race for a seat on the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Tell us why that's important and how that campaign is unfolding.
So we have a mandatory retirement here of 75, and the previous Democrat on the Supreme Court passed away late last year, but even if that had not unfortunately happened, the seat would have been up. So it's a mandatory retirement, like I said. So we now have a Democratic judge by the name of Dan McCaffrey. He's on the Superior Court. And the Republican nominee is Carolyn Carluccio, who was the president judge there in Montgomery County. So two competent, qualified candidates, both rated highly qualified by the Pennsylvania Bar Association. The Supreme Court now, including that one vacancy, is four Democrats, two Republicans. Republicans have won the last two Supreme Court elections we've had in the state, but those have been to hold seats that were already held by a Republican. So this now is what we call an open seat. So it's a chance for Republicans to get closer to a majority or for Democrats to go back to what they had before, which was 5-2. So both those candidates are on TV. I'm sure your listeners have seen ads for them and against them, by them and for them. People may not really understand what the other appellate courts, Superior and Commonwealth, do, but they certainly can understand what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court does. And it is the oldest appellate court in the country. So it has some importance for that, and also because it's the Supreme Court. So think about what comes before the U.S. Supreme Court, and our Supreme Court is the final arbiter for Pennsylvania-centric issues.
And this Supreme Court has been highly controversial in recent years, Chris. They've had a lot of very important cases, as you've mentioned, come before them. So has that been an issue in this campaign?
I think it has been an issue, and also, Lohman, it has increased people's concern for who the Supreme Court member is from both parties and all ideologies, whether the cases might surround an issue like abortion or how and when we vote or other kind of basic regulatory things that the state is in the business of regulating. So yes, and we are the only state in the country with a Supreme Court race this fall where the candidates run with their party label. Many other states have court elections, but they don't have an R or a D next to their name. Now, let's be real. The voters in those states know which is the Republican and which is the Democrat. Here in Pennsylvania, of course, we know that because it's their party. So when people go into the polls to vote, they will see the candidate's name. They'll know what party they're in. And underneath their name, it will also say what county they're from here in Pennsylvania.
You referenced the fact we have two other courts, the Superior Court and the Commonwealth Court, both of which are statewide appellate courts. Those races will appear on everyone's ballot as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are two Superior Court slots open. The Superior Court is, so for instance, suppose you get convicted. I'm sure none of your listeners, Lohman, but you get convicted of bank robbery or you go through a divorce and you want to appeal it. Those would go to the Superior Court. So it's the court where most cases have their final determination because only a few cases ultimately get heard by the Supreme Court. So you have two candidates from each race. There's a primary on the Democratic side, and they finalized their two candidates, Jill Beck of Allegheny County, and Tamika Lane, who was a Philadelphia Common Pleas Court judge. On the Republican side, you have attorney Maria Batista of Northampton County and Harry Small Jr., who is a current Westmoreland County judge. So each ticket has an attorney and a sitting judge. The Democrats are running two women. The Republicans are running a man and a woman. I think that gives the Democrats a slight edge because most of the winners in recent Supreme Court races where there has been an option for a female candidate, the woman has won regardless of party. And then the other statewide appellate court is the one Lohman, I guess, would probably have the least visibility, and that's the Commonwealth Court. Commonwealth Court is referred to as an administrative court. So if someone loses their unemployment compensation review or their workers' comp review, they can try to take it to the Commonwealth Court to have an actual court case about it. And then these days, what it's most involved in and what people most hear about is it's the court where all election challenges start. That's one of its purviews. So if someone's challenging an election result or something like that, or someone's challenging someone's petitions to get on the ballot somewhere, those ultimately can be at the Commonwealth Court level. There's one opening on the Commonwealth Court this year, Lohman. So like I said, people have one vote to cast in the Supreme Court race, up to two votes to cast in the Superior Court race, and one vote to cast in the Commonwealth Court race. And that is on the Republican side, you have Megan Martin of Cumberland County, who was most previously the state Senate parliamentarian. And on the Democratic side, you have a fellow named Matt Wolf, who was a Philadelphia municipal court judge. In any other county, that would be referred to as a magisterial district court. But in Philly, they have different nomenclature. They call it municipal court. I think you should vote for two candidates for Superior Court because that's how many openings there are. It's not a requirement. Mm-hmm. So if you go in, same with county commissioners, which we'll talk about in a minute, even though you have a couple votes to cast, you can only vote for one if you're not sold on any of the others.
We are talking with Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting about the upcoming election. We've so far been talking about the statewide judicial. You did reference we have county commissioners and a wide, wide array of county, municipal, school board races. Want to talk a bit about what voters are going to find there.
Yeah, for voters, Loman, this year, the county commissioner year, the year before the presidential race, is always our busiest ballot because you have county commissioners and a lot of the row offices like county treasurer and registrar and recorder, those sorts of things. Plus, you have your council or supervisors or commissioners, as we call them, here in Pennsylvania for your township or your borough or your city. And then we also have school board races. So it's a lot of choices for people to make. Most counties in the state have three county commissioners, two of each party run in the top three win. There are a couple counties that are home rule counties. One of them is Philadelphia. They have an open mayoral race there. The current mayor is term limited. He served his two terms. You have Sherelle Parker, the Democratic nominee, who is a former member of city council. And you have David O, the Republican nominee, also a former member of city council. They have a resign to run rule in Philadelphia, Loman. So all the city council people, they could not run for mayor unless they resigned first. I think they had five folks altogether resigned to do that. Also in Allegheny County, they have a county executive. That's how they did their type of home rule. And that is a very close race, even though Democrats have a strong voter registration advantage there. The Republican nominee is a retired banker by the name of Joe Rocky. And the Democratic nominee is a former state representative by the name of Sarah Inamorato. She served parts of three terms in the state house and earlier this summer resigned from that position. The most recent polling I've seen in that race is it's essentially tied.
Yeah, that race in particular here, Chris, Allegheny County by voter registration, of course, is very heavily Democrat. But the Democrats really split the vote in the primary with a number of sort of traditional Democrats splitting up the vote. And tell us a little bit about Sarah Inamorato's background, which is really what's making this a competitive race.
Yeah, there was a five-way race, Loman, for Democratic county executive. And you're right. One of the guys who lost said, too many of my other opponents were just like me, basically a middle-aged white Democratic man. So if there had been a one-on-one race between one of them and Representative Inamorato, who's much younger and much further to the left, it would have been a different story. But because there was one of her and four other candidates, her district is the state house district she used to represent. It's about half in the city, half in the suburbs. So I would say she's a very traditional Democrat in terms of what the city of Pittsburgh is looking for. She was formerly aligned with the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, which is a very left-wing group. It remains to be seen now whether the county as large is ready for someone that's as far to the left as she is. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 7th. Election day this year, Loman, is the latest it can be. And also we have mail-in balloting that people can do up until the weekend before Election Day.
We have been talking with veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting about the upcoming, just days away, November 7th general election. Chris, where can folks find you on the web?
Well, my general website for Eagle Consulting Group, Loman, is eagleconsult.com. As you know, I also ventured into the podcasting, producing, and hosting world this year, and I did a five-part series. I hosted and produced a five-part series on Pennsylvania political corruption, which people can find at papoliticaldigest.com.
Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting, as he does twice a year, comes in and fills us in on what's happening with the upcoming election. Chris, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Lowen.
Many challenges await those who are elected Tuesday to lead county governments. For a look at some of those issues, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi for this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. Eric, you did a report recently on Allegheny County, specifically the chief executive. Our chief executive, Rich Fitzgerald, has served three terms. He's no longer allowed to serve another one. We will have a new county executive in January. And Mr. Fitzgerald put out his final budget. How does his final budget for 2024 look?
It looks like a $3 billion spending plan. The budget, which is for the comprehensive fiscal plan, because there's an operating budget, that's about $1 billion, a capital budget, grants, and then special counts. The operating budget is the main day-to-day guides how the county functions. It receives the money from the property tax, receives money from state and federal sources. It covers operations, debt service, supports the Mass Transit Agency, Pittsburgh Regional Transit, infrastructure support, so like road work. That is a $1 billion plan, 3% over what was approved for 2023, which still has two more months to go before that year is over. But altogether, we're talking about a $3 billion spending plan.
And for those listening across the state, you think, well, why do I care about Allegheny County? Allegheny County sort of encapsulates what all counties across the Commonwealth are able to do. A lot of it's just passing money through from the state and from the feds. But they all have similar problems and basic issues to deal with. Specifically, things like property assessments. Allegheny County has had an issue with property assessments for quite some time. You've written a lot about it. What recommendations do you have for the new chief executive regarding assessments?
The recommendation is to move forward with first doing a reassessment and then keeping the reassessments frequent, meaning let's move to some type of schedule. As you mentioned, every county in Pennsylvania levies property tax, and the counties are responsible for putting the assessed values on property. State law allows counties to use either current market value or a base year. Most counties use a base year. Allegheny County is on a 2012 base year, meaning that's when the reassessments were done. And then any changes going forward come from appeals, demolition, improvements, new construction, corrections. But everything is then valued in the 2012 base year value. There was a lawsuit that got the county to reassess in the first place. There was a lawsuit that went all the way up to the Supreme Court and then was dismissed over what we've referred to and other parties have referred to as the newcomer tax, meaning somebody buys a home and a taxing body will appeal to try to get it closer to the sale price. And now there is still an ongoing, mostly settled, but still not all the way there, lawsuit over the common level ratio, which is something that the state calculates and then is used in appeals when people decide or taxing bodies decide if they're going to appeal. The appeal board establishes the market value, and then they apply the common level ratio. The lawsuit over that, just to give you the abridged version, is that the county submitted data that wasn't accurate, and the courts then ordered a reduction in the common level ratio. Where that all ends up for what all those years that are involved in the lawsuit, we'll still see. But the recommendation is to move away from what is a base year and not knowing when the next reassessment is going to happen. I mean, that is what you have across Pennsylvania is right now. I mean, in the next few years, as you mentioned, there's people that are listening across the state that their county may be on their way to having updated values. I think there's like maybe a half a dozen counties right now that are going through a reassessment. After they do that, there's really no idea when the next one is going to occur. So that we've argued, well, the state should do something. The counties are in charge of the assessments. They could change their policies and do it. Or then it comes to the courts, and you really don't want the courts to be involved. So that's the recommendation, is to do a reassessment and then have a plan to keep them frequently updated.
Right. As you said, assessments are a problem throughout the Commonwealth because we rely on property taxes to fund our schools, and that's really where the largest part comes from. You also mentioned public transportation, Pittsburgh Regional Transit. They're still struggling to get back to pre-pandemic passenger levels. What kind of recommendations do you have regarding public transportation?
The county executive needs to appoint people to the PRT board that are going to align that agency with what looks like is going to be this post-pandemic reality. Prior to 2013, the chief executive appointed all the members of a 9-member authority board. Then the state changed the law, enlarged the board from 9 members to 11, and reduced the numbers of members appointed by the chief executive to 6. And 2 of those appointees have restrictions tied to them. They have to be confirmed by the county council, and they have to be drawn from lists. Most of the operating money comes from state dollars. Now it is the sales tax on motor vehicles and fines and everything that goes into the public transportation trust fund. The recommendation there is to appoint people that's going to the board that is going to look at the fleet, what type of vehicles are used, the routes, because ultimately what we as Allegheny and visitors, not only Allegheny County residents, but visitors who come here, they're paying taxes on alcoholic beverages and rental vehicles. That provides the local match for the state operating subsidy. And what might happen is if the PRT just keeps going on the way it is, there's going to be more calls for state money, which then in turn raises the local match. And there's already been talk about giving counties, specifically Allegheny County and a few others, additional taxing power, which they would be able to have new levies at the county level in order to support mass transit.
When Allegheny County became a home rule county way back in 2000, they were compared to some other counties that were held up as sort of a benchmark. Now, you did your own benchmark study this past summer. What recommendations would you give the new county executive regarding benchmarking the county of Allegheny?
But making it a regular process that the county is looking at a set of counties around the United States that they draw on as competitors, maybe for jobs or population, and they look at how much does the county spend on these functions? How much is the county raising in taxes? How much does the county get from the state or federal government? We leaned on what we did with our benchmark city with substituting one other county and using 2019 data, found that Allegheny County in that year on a per person basis spent the most, taxed the most, or raised the most revenue, and had the second highest number of employees when you looked at that on a per 1,000 person basis. As you mentioned, the move from the commissioner system to the executive council manager system was put into place. The group that studied that issue looked at other counties, were looking for best practices, were looking for economic growth. And in the years since, most of those counties, with the exception of, I believe, one, have surpassed Allegheny County in terms of population and job growth. It's probably something that is worth revisiting going into the future years here of Home Rule.
Wow, that's terrific stuff. And I would like to thank Eric for joining me today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like more information on this or any other topics, I invite you to visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. Thank you.
Continuing resolutions, shutdown threats, omnibus spending bills, all symptoms of Congress's tendency to govern by crisis. There is a better way, as we learn from Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
If this year has taught taxpayers anything, it's this. Washington politicians are not immune to putting partisan politics before the interests of the constituents they represent. We're 3 weeks away from a federal government shutdown. This is not new. In fact, this is crisis-to-crisis governing that ultimately puts American taxpayers in a lose-lose situation. Shutdowns have been happening since the 80s, and its impact historically leads to bloated, wasteful omnibus spending that puts the White House and chamber leaders in the driver's seat, forcing rank-and-file members to support legislation out of fear and urgency. What leads to the creation of bloated, wasteful spending bills? The fear of government shutdowns forces leaders to create omnibus spending bills to minimize the complaints of special interest groups in the effort of pushing this legislation through in a timely manner. The needs of everyday taxpayers aren't factored into the equation. And as the saying goes, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and special interests are served over the concerns of constituents. As with many issues that plague Washington, D.C., there's a better way. In a welcomed bipartisan effort from Senators Lankford and Hassan and Representatives Arrington and Panetta, the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act was introduced in both chambers. Simply put, this resolution would extend current funding levels while Congress finalizes appropriations bills and would keep Congress in session every day working on appropriations bills until all bills are enacted. Through automatic continuing appropriations, the services that we as Americans have come to expect will continue at their current levels, and if enacted, the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act would prevent bloated backroom deals and allow for responsible governance in the midst of uncertain budget discussions. Despite this legislation having broad bipartisan support, the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act failed the Senate by just 4 votes. Our Pennsylvania senators, Senator Bob Casey and John Fetterman, voted against the bipartisan measure, further allowing for shady backroom deals to take precedent over sound, common-sense budgeting reform. Instead of accountability, our senators from the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania chose special interests. Instead of certainty, our senators chose crisis. This vote, offered as an amendment to 3 spending measures, narrowly failed the Senate, but there's still hope for the legislation's success in the House chamber. It's important to note, too, that the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act was crafted with input from both the Biden administration as well as the former Trump administration. This shows the true bipartisan, common sense nature of this measure, and our senators' opposition to common sense reform should be noted by the constituents that elect them to office. November 17th is the date that looms over Washington decision makers. Will they let the clock run out and face another nonsensical false choice to budget by crisis? Or will Washington choose to make room for the hardworking taxpayers across the country at the decision-making table? Your voice on this matter is of critical importance. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to send a message straight to your representative in Washington. Sign your name, send a letter that will go straight to their inboxes so they know you care about this issue and you want to see better budgeting reform in Washington. Again, that's AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WQZS-FM in Myersdale, WMSS-FM in Middletown, along with WJUN-AM in Mexico, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.